Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, this is the Coast to Coast Radio Show, and I'm your host, Ron Fitch. Today, we're going to talk about a lot of stuff. There's a lot of things that happened over the weekend in the NFL and the Major League Playoffs, NCAA football. I'm going to praise a great guy like Daniel Murphy on the Mets. I'm going to extremely criticize Jay Gruden of the Washington Redskins. It's going to be complete opposites. We're going to get into that a little later. First, I'm going to talk about the two teams that played in the Super Bowl last year and the different directions they're going in after one very, very stupid play call that has reverberated into this year. And the benefactors of that idiotic, stupid play call at the goal line of last year's Super Bowl, the New England Patriots. And they played the Indianapolis Colts, who reported on this Deflategate, and I got into that the other show. I'm not going to get into that. So everybody's talking about New England running up the score. I knew this game was going to be close. I know New England, it was back and forth, scoring TD after TD, back and forth, you know, and Brady's going up and down the field. LeGarrette Blount ran good, and Frank Gore ran good. So you have this back and forth. Luck had 312. Brady had 312, the same amount of yards. It came down to a stupid fake punt. It's hard to even describe the dumb play that they tried to run. Didn't work because Belichick's waiting for it. They get the short field. Brady scores. They're up 34-21. And New England, and then the Colts come back and get another score, but it's too late. And New England wins, and they're undefeated, and they have benefited. They've kind of springboarded since that Super Bowl and that dumb call by Pete Carroll's coaching staff not to run Marshawn Lynch in the Super Bowl, which was the dumbest, probably the dumbest play in, other than this fake kick, the dumbest play in history. And they had a 5-0 and playing a red-hot New York Jet team. And that's going to be a great matchup next Sunday at 1 o'clock. Now we go to Seattle, and they play the Carolina Panthers at home. These are the games that I always see Seattle win. They, you know, and it came out, Marshawn Lynch is playing, and pounding the ball to Marshawn Lynch. He scores. It's 10-7 Seattle. They're fired up. Then the third quarter comes, and they do a flea flicker. It's a gorgeous play with Russell Wilson throwing a bomb to Lockett, who scores. He jumps over his defender and scores. And you're thinking, all right, Seattle's on their way. They're winning. They're back. They're struggled. They're not going to lose and screw up in the fourth quarter again. But Cam Newton showed me something. Reading defense as well, going to Olsen. Getting in and down 27. Usually teams fold at Seattle. They came back, cut it to 6. All right. Seattle's thinking, all right, they're kind of formidable today. Well, we always win the fourth quarter. Here comes Russell Wilson finding his new favorite target, a Jimmy Graham who goes for about 40 yards. And they're excited, but Seattle didn't score. They didn't put him away. So it's 23-14. They got a field goal out of it. Newton is dealing, throwing darts past Richard Sherman, Olsen going in the by the end zone, and Jonathan Stewart finishing off again to make it 23-20 in the fourth quarter. But still, okay, Seattle's always put the game away by running the ball or Russell Wilson making a run or throw and right out of the clock, but no. They got to stop. Now Carolina has the ball. Uh-oh, 2:13 left, and Newton's hot. Throwing dimes and darts to Ted Ginn. And then he just got hot. Then he got to the 40-yard line and threw another incredible pass to Tolbert. And now finally, instead of settling for a field goal to the 28-yard line, he pump fakes, read the defense, finds the ball down the seam, and hits Olsen for the touchdown, and Carolina wins. And you could see Richard Sherman and Champ Chancellor looking, I got him. No, you got him. I got him. You got him. Nobody had him. And they lost. And that's kind of how Seattle's lost this year. And I'm going to tell you something. You look at the Cincinnati game, you look at the Green Bay game, you look at the way they've lost these games, they're 2-4. They have never psychologically recovered from the Super Bowl. How do you recover from that? When you have Marshawn Lynch with the ball and Belichick's going to give you the touchdown, he's going to give you the touchdown because he wants Brady to get the ball back. And you don't give Lynch the ball. You throw your quarterback under the bus trying to throw an impossible slant play at the one-yard line that had no chance of succeeding. And the players looked at that like, wow, we could have won if the coaches would have just let Marshawn Lynch run. Marshawn Lynch is looking at you in a certain way. You got Marshawn Lynch's mother talking about stuff. You got Cam Chancellor said, now he's coming back. But the defense is giving up touchdowns because they don't believe in each other anymore. There's a belief. You choke and you're in a game and the championship is handed to you and you don't win. That does something to you psychologically. You're trying to come back the next year, but it's just not the same. You don't have the same belief in your inner belief. They had an inner belief because you looked at the Green Bay game last year when they played the championship game down. They had an inner belief that they were going to make the comeback. And that's always been Seattle's thing. They have a confidence, even if it's overconfident, that they could just beat you up in the line of scrimmage and beat you. Now that their line isn't as good, they're not running, and that's kind of their personality. And they're getting a lot of field goals in the red zone, and it's just not the same team. And I think they're going to have a long year. I really do. And they're going to be one of those talented teams that just, I don't know if they could get it together. Yesterday really showed, I kind of opened my eyes to the problems that the Seahawks are having, and that's going to linger. Then the one game I told you guys about was my Pittsburgh Steelers, and I said that it would be a close game. I don't know if they would win or not. Don't believe the reports that they were going to get blown out, even with Vic there. And really, the Steelers won this game 25-13. They really should have gotten blown out because they got out game 414-169. This game, the Cardinals are going to be kicking themselves. This is the one the Cardinals is a tough one. They go up 7-0. Floyd scores. Steelers come back, get a field goal. Here's where it changed. It was 13-play, 68-yard drive that the Cardinals had their chance to make it 14-3 and maybe put the game away, but they had to settle for a field goal. And when the Steelers went to halftime 10-3, I'm thinking, they got a chance. Because I'm watching the first half, and the way the Cardinals are going up and down the field, I said, they got no chance. Cardinals are going to win, and the Steelers don't have a chance. And Vic got hurt, which was a blessing in disguise because it's just not – it just doesn't seem like it's working with Vic in this offense of Todd Haley. And Landry Jones came in. He's more of a drop-back quarterback. So, guys, he waits to throw guys open. And Martavius Bryant caught a touchdown pass. And the Steelers are winning. After a 48-yard field goal from Chris Boswell, which has really settled the kicking problems the Steelers had, Martavius Bryant scores an 8-yard touchdown pass from Landry Jones, 12-10. Now they had the lead. They really shut down the Cardinals for a while after that. Boswell gets a 51-yard clutch to give them a 5-point lead. So now the Cardinals can't come down and get a field goal. So now they're pressing to get a touchdown. They don't. 6 plays, 61 yards, and they have to settle for a field goal. That's big. They still have the lead. And they come down with a 13-play, 68-yard drive, and Landry Jones has settled them down, and that took time off the clock, 18-13. But I thought the Steelers should have scored because they're at the goal line, and I said, man, if they go up 22-13, two-possession lead, they got them. But the Cardinals drive at the 20-yard line, and Mitchell makes an incredible athletic interception over Carson Palmer. Read it right. Brown burned Blake again. Brown had 189 yards on Blake, and Blake usually plays good for steals, but he was bad today. And he was about to get burned again until Mitchell came out of nowhere for an interception. So I'm thinking, you better run the clock up, but you better pass the ball, because there's two minutes and change left, and the Cardinals have three timeouts, and they just move the ball quickly down the field. And Martavis Bryant catches a short pass from Landry and goes 88 yards. He cuts back. It was an amazing run. He goes to the left, cuts back to the right, flying down the field. Then he cuts quickly back to the right to kind of throw the Cardinals off, and then he runs in the end zone. And it was the Honey Badger, Tyrone Mathieu. He had a beat on him, but kind of when he kind of got confused when he got when Bryant cut back to the end zone. And a lot of the Arizona fans thought he was dogging and he was jogging. I don't think it was that big case. He got tricked by the way Bryant juked him out. I don't. You can't ever get on the Honey Badger. The guy played his heart out. They just lost. But it wasn't a division loss, so the Cardinals should still win the division at 4-2 with the way the Seahawks are playing. Then there's an interesting game I watched yesterday. The Chargers and the Green Bay Packers. This was interesting because of the fact that Green Bay, I thought Green Bay would just annihilate the Chargers at Green Bay, and it didn't happen. And Phillip Rivers imposed his will in this game. He brought him back, cut it to 17-10 at halftime, then it was game on. And LeGarius Green ties the game up. Chargers are driving again with the game tied. Phillip Rivers gets sacked. It changed momentum. Green Bay gets the ball back, goes down the field, 7 plays, 68 yards. James Jones is really – the Giants should have never let go. He goes to Green Bay and makes another touchdown pass, back shoulder. Him and Aaron Rodgers had that back shoulder touchdown pass down pat. And then Josh Lambeau kicks a field goal. Mason Crosby kicks a field goal. The Chargers are driving. And they are at the goal line. Phil Rivers was at the 5-yard line on third down. Could have ran it in. They gave him the lane. Could have threw it to Danny Woodhead, who was wide open, but he tried to throw it into double coverage with Gates. It was incomplete. Fourth down, they don't get their completion. Rivers going to kick himself a third down, not running it in or not throwing it to Woodhead. He's going to kick himself about that third down play. But Green Bay wins. Nevertheless, they're undefeated. I'm not crazy about Green Bay's defense. They better get better. They're an attacking defense, but you could burn them too. So that's something you could think about if you're the Cardinals or the Cowboys or the Giants and you run up against Green Bay. They are vulnerable now. Of course, Rodgers is good. And I don't like the way Lacy's playing this year. He fumbled. Starks is really their guy this year. I don't know what's wrong with Lacy. He did not feature him as much, too. Now I get to the Washington Jet game. The Jets destroyed the Washington Redskins 34-14. Why am I mentioning this game? Because Jay Gruden, in a try to just stay out of this Washington nonsense, but after listening to him talk, that was the last straw. Kirk Cousins stinks. He has 8 interceptions in 6 games this year. He had 2 interceptions and 1 TD and should have gotten pulled after a while. He refuses to pull him because of his pride, because of Jay Gruden's pride. After the game, he says, well, Kirk Cousins, he doesn't have his weapons. It's always one excuse after the other in a press conference defending Kirk Cousins when you completely threw RG3 off the bus. Never gave him a real chance last year. Threw him under the bus the same, talking about his footwork after RG3 had said a couple of things. And it got personal. It can't get personal with you as the coach. You're a coach. Players play. You're not buddy-buddy with these guys. And it's his way the highway, and really his way is not working. And he's stubborn. He'd rather lose with Cousins than take a chance to possibly win with RG3. Now, listen, I'm not sure what we got with RG3, but I'd rather play him because you got rid of all those draft picks for him. So what I would do is play RG. This is what I would do. I'd fire Jay Gruden. I would just let go. I'd fire him today. I would padlock his office. Don't just go. I don't even want to see you anymore because he's petty. You can't be a coach and be petty. And you got to send him on his way. He's not ready. John Gruden, like him. Jay Gruden, not so good. Getting rid of him. Your Cousins was 25 or 43 yesterday. So half the passes he's throwing are going to the ground. I want to see what RG, because I invested so much, I would play RG3 the rest of the year. See what you got. Let's see what he could do. Play Alfred Morris again because you're sitting your 1,000-yard runner on the bench too. You're stupid. Just dumb coaching moves. And Jay Gruden has to go. I fired him today. Why waste time? If your system, if you care more about your system than winning, there's no reason you need to be anywhere near my facilities if I'm the owner of the Washington Redskins. If I'm Daniel Snyder, I cut bait right now. Put in an interim coach. Go find you a real coach with some real character this time. Instead of these coaches that are just flawed, that are take things personal. Go get you a real coach. That city of Washington is hemorrhaging right now. You know, you got the Nationals that constantly choke. The Wizards are good, but they're not good enough to go to the finals. That city suffers. But their main focus is the Skins. And the Skins just, since Joe Gibbs in the 90s, they just can't get out of their way. It's one thing after the next. It's one coach after the next. This is not the – Jay Gruden's not the answer. But you want to keep him. They keep cutting, you're going to keep losing. And eventually the fans are going to not show up. And they're going to smack you in the pocketbook. And then that wake-up call comes. Why wait? Get rid of them. Okay, I had to get that out of my system. Now, my praise. And we go to the baseball playoffs, the Cubs and the Mets. My praise goes to Daniel Murphy, who's not only a great player, he's a good person. And it couldn't happen to a nicer guy. He hit another home run. Four home runs in a row. He's got one off Arrieta, Lester, Kershaw, Greinke. It don't matter. Walter Johnson could walk up out of the dead and he's not getting Murphy out. He just locked in. I did see Joe Maddon do a little strategizing. He kind of pitched him differently, pitched him on the outside corner. They walked him. So they're kind of understanding that he's the guy. The rest of the Mets aren't really hitting, but once Murphy hit that home run and they go up 3-0, the game is over. And like I told you, what happens when you have a young team and they get hit on the road, there's no recovery because they don't have any experience. Like the Kansas City Royals, okay, we're down 3-0, but we are coming back. Royals will battle you and battle you and battle you. You literally have to give blood to beat a team like the Kansas City Royals because they don't mind being down. They don't mind being down 3-0. They don't mind being no hit for 6 innings. They take their time. They get singles. They don't swing for the fences. They don't swing at bad pitches. And that's why I believe the Mets will win. But as a Cub fan, I'm thinking, don't go out. Don't get swept. Don't get down 3-0 and then not score the rest of the game or a nondescript pedestrian run late when it's too late. Make it a fight. When you go to Wrigley Field, I'm asking a lot. Get 2 out of 3 and then let the Mets win in 6. I mean, I'm asking a lot as a company. It's almost like going to the bank and be like, can I get a loan for like $1 million? Okay, let's look at your credit score, your income, which is not happening, but I'm still asking for it. So I'm asking for a very difficult task. I'm asking you to beat DeGrom. I'm asking for things I shouldn't ask for as a Cub fan. I'm asking you to win 2 out of 3 and then lose in 6 and make the Mets have to win on their field. I don't know if that's going to happen. The Mets could sweep. The Mets could win in 5. I'm hoping they win in 6. I believe this team could kind of have a little fire under their belly, and then the Mets could celebrate on their field and get ready for what I believe will be the Royals. I love what the Royals did. That team, they were down 3-0 to David Price, and then after an error by Bautista in the field, well, the pop fly, and he looked at it, and it dropped. He's looking at the second baseman. That's all the Royals need. Then they get 6 straight singles, Gordon double, Rios single, 5-3, sacrifice fly by Morales, 6-3. And now you're in trouble. And now the Jays are down 2-0 with Johnny Cueto, who's on a roll, who doesn't give up a lot of home runs because the Blue Jays get fired up. They fire their crowd up on home runs. He doesn't give up home runs. He's on a roll. And what he sometimes quick pitches, but what I do love what he does, not only does he mix his breakup ball and his fastball, he can't really time it and what he does in his count, but he's always on the outside corner or the inside corner. He's not really going to give you nothing down the plate. And he does that little Louis Tiant shimmy where he kind of gives you a little turn away, and then he pitches the ball. He's a fascinating character, but he hadn't been good in the postseason. He hadn't been good in the pressure, but he's on a mission. But Stroman of the Blue Jays, I'm going to tell you something. Stroman of the Blue Jays, he pitched great in that deciding game. And I'm just wondering if he could do it again because he pitched fantastic. He pitched fantastic the second half of the season for the Blue Jays, and they're going to need him. And he was big time. His stuff is electric. But that's a great match. It was probably going to be a low-scoring game. I think that the Royals could get a game in Toronto and then finish them in 6. And I'm going to have the Royals and Mets in an epic World Series. Because both teams are fighters. But the Mets will find out that, the Mets didn't really get a lot of hits after they scored 4 runs because they knew they kind of had the game in the bag. They really got all the hits in the first inning, and then they were able to coast. You can't coast against the Royals because of their experience. Been there. They're on a holy mission to win it all after losing Game 7 at home to Bumgarner. But maybe the Mets have a Bumgarner. Maybe Syndergaard or DeGrom could be that guy in Game 7 to shut them down. That's what the Mets have. But the Royals have the desire and the they have better hitters all throughout their lineup. So if the Mets and Royals play, that's a hard series to analyze because part of me is saying the Mets because I see them all year. But the other part of me is saying Kansas City because this could be their time. Because last year they just came up short. That's the fun. And then and I'm going to try to do a remote show in the city, so I'm working on that. So I'm assuming the Mets will get to the World Series. I'm not quite assuming the Royals are because of how powerful and how explosive Toronto could be at home. But I'm quite sure the Mets are fine in their series. Now I go to college football, and this game... I'm not a Michigan fan, but I kind of fell in love with this team because they didn't have a lot. They weren't highly touted. I really, really wanted to see if they could pull off a couple upsets. And Michigan, Ohio State is a battle of a one loss versus an undefeated team. That could have been an epic game. But Michigan plays Michigan State. It's a tight game. Michigan's up 20-14. They get another field goal, and I really wanted Michigan to score when they got close. They had a turnover, and it was 4 plays and 8 yards, and they didn't score and put the game away to make it 27-14, which would have – it was big, because then they go right down the field. Michigan State, they're going right down the field and score to make it 23-21. Then Michigan has the ball with 10 seconds left to punt, and Blake O'Neal drops the punt. You fall on the ball. Game's over. They don't have enough time to kick a field goal. But he panics, and he fumbles, and Jalen Watts Jackson runs it 38 yards for a touchdown. You got to catch that punt. And it's just bad because Michigan State really, the game was over, really. Michigan State, Michigan finally breaks the hoax. The eight-game losing streak is over, and they lose that devastating. And then, of course, everybody, the college kids are going to go after Blake O'Neal and give him death threats because it was such an emotional, devastating loss, and that's so unfortunate. And hopefully that kid can go to the pros, because if that's his legacy, that's a shame. Because then that you take that. Unless you're one of the strongest, toughest, most spiritually strongest guy in the world, you take that all the way to your grave. That's forever. That is forever in the rivalry. And Michigan's going to have to win a couple. And Michigan's going to have to win a national championship to get the stench of this game out of their system. And now how do you get out? How do you go to Minnesota and play? I don't know what Harbaugh's going to do. How do you even recover from that? But it's a learning experience because this is Harbaugh's first year. He doesn't have his recruits. So when he gets his recruits, this will probably be a distant memory. But this right now, that is the absolute worst possible way you could lose. And then Arizona State got blown out by Utah. And Arizona State's a pretty good team, but Utah is the real deal. And Travis Wilson played a great game. When you got Devontae Booker as your running back, and then Travis Wilson's passing the ball good, and they got an opportunistic defense, they got a chance. They're going to be in the playoffs. I believe they're going to win their Pac-10 because UCLA is is a fraud. USC is a fraud, blowing the game to Notre Dame. And then Oregon's a fraud because they got destroyed already 62-20 by the Utah Utes. Utah and Stanford are the two best teams, and I cannot wait to see those two teams play. I believe they're on a collision course. The physical style of Shaw's team against the Utah Utes, I'm pumped for that. And then finally, Florida and LSU, both Harris's played good. The backup quarterback for Florida, Treyon Harris, had 271 yards, two TDs, no interceptions. Florida's going to be fine. I've wondered about their backup quarterback, but I'm sold after that. They went back and forth, and then Leonard Fournette took over the game because Brandon Harris was big, 202 yards and two touchdowns. So LSU was passing the ball good. That's a great sign for LSU as far as them being a championship contender. And Fournette had 180 yards of hard running, just took over the game and scored that last touchdown, 35-28 they won. So that's pretty much it. I have covered everything, all in a 30-minute time span. Friday we're going to have a special baseball show. Will the Cubs still be around? Will they be gone? What about Toronto? It's going to be very, very interesting.